Live from New York, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to explore a lot of topics from mitochondria. That is the little energy factory of our body. When it's diminished, we end up with brain fog, mental fatigue. Our heart doesn't beat the same. Our muscles don't have the energy. More on how we can have healthier mitochondria and actually live a longer life. Then we're going to share some insights from Christina Sarich on the microbiological look at the body. Because more and more geneticists are saying, it's failed. We are not the prisoners of our genes. So think of all the people from Angelina Jolie to others who had completely healthy breasts, had them removed based upon some macabre, distorted, and dystopian notion of your body under the control of medicine. We'll deal with that. Also, an in-depth look at vitamin C and how it cures disease, but doctors and pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know this. Why not? Also today, a commentary from Professor Henry Giroux from Counterpunch, The Curse of Totalitarianism and the Challenge of an Intersectional Power Grab. My guest in the second part of our program today is Dr. Jill Stein. We're going to talk about where does a Green Party platform differ from the Democrats on foreign policy and international trades. Normally, I do not interview politicians because I find most of them boring, not very bright, and the conversations provide little true insight. Dr. Stein is a very brilliant person, and in the past, when we've had third-party candidates on, she has made some important statements. But today I'm going to ask her things I haven't asked her in the past. Let's see how she responds. Also, Hillary Clinton, when she was Secretary of State, received an awful lot of donations through the Clinton Foundation. In fact, according to David Sorta of Salon.com, quote, the Clinton Foundation's business relationship with 20 foreign governments raises real questions about her judgment. I think her judgment's perfect. How else can you and a husband of such little or non-existent integrity, morals, values, and spiritual awareness accumulate $2 billion and still be extraordinarily popular? It says a lot about we the people, less about them. And also, a former U.S. Attorney General files a brief in lawsuit challenging the legality of the Iraq War. Thought this was interesting. So we have a lot to share. Let's begin. You can watch today's program by going to Ustream channel and search for Gary Null. Also, something I'm doing to help a lot of people who are just not used to reading long articles but want quality information in more encapsulated form. I have completed over 150 on my way to 500 short informational mini docs. They're anywhere from 5 to 10 minutes long. The longest I think is 12 minutes. And I took the themes that are most important to most people. For example, on health, every kind of illness, I go into depth and share ideas of what causes it and natural non-toxic approaches through lifestyle and behavior modification to change the course of that. And in gardening, homesteading, grafting plants so that you have interesting new types, how to create healthier soil. And I'm there actually in the gardens doing it all, showing you every step, how to exercise. So on all these issues that are important to you, you now have little mini segments. Hundreds are on their way. Over 100 exist now. Even how to shop in a regular store for healthy items and how to shop in a health food store as well. So I'm covering everything. You can watch those on Ustream channel, but also we'll be having them on the Progressive Radio Network as well. So we have a lot to share with you. The mitochondria are the energy powerhouses of the body. And if we understand them, we understand that when we're tired, it's more often than not because there's a stress upon our adrenal glands and we've hit adrenal exhaustion. People are highly stressed, people overwork, people party too hard, people work too hard, people exercise too hard. Your adrenals simply become exhausted. Now, the trouble is if you had a full battery of tests, viral loads, bacteria, parasites, you'd find you're completely normal. Even your blood sugar is normal. Your thyroid is normal. And then it hits the wall. Medicine simply doesn't understand about energy. So the one thing that you should pay attention to when you're tired is your adrenal glands. And there's a combination of things that can exhaust them. It generally takes about 3 to 6 months to fully rejuvenate them. And I'll give you an idea of how to do that. But also one of the most important topics in nutrition and lifestyle modification, not medical research, is the impact of our mitochondria, mito, M-I-T-O, chondria, C-H-O-N-D-R-I-A, is on human aging. Simply put, what have we all noticed about people getting older? They have less energy, and they slow down, or we expect them to slow down. When I was growing up, as a baby boomer, the older you got, old was over the age of 40, you weren't expected to be vigorous. You weren't expected to do any athletics. You were expected to take your time. And people were just assumed that, well, you had less energy. So that's the mitochondria at work. But then again, when I was growing up, every single person I knew smoked. 2 to 3 packs, 4 packs a day in my family. They ate meat. They ate a lot of fried food. They had a lot of sugar. They drank a lot of alcohol. They didn't exercise. They repressed their anger and feelings. I wonder what could possibly go wrong. Well, it did. And as a result, we see that. The notion is we will only know the truth of our choices in life when we reach our destinations. Now think of that for a moment, please. You keep making choices, sometimes out of a concern for others, yourself, insecurity, not realizing there's going to be a consequence. You may not see the full impact of this consequence now, but it will meet you at some time in the future. Then when we get the consequence, we're frequently terrified by it. We're afraid. And yet we still don't learn. That's my experience from counseling an awful lot of people, tens of thousands of people. So why not look ahead at the likely outcome of the choice you're about to make and ask, am I going to be happy with this or not? So when it comes to our body, if you know that your mitochondria, your energy factories, are going to be impacted in a positive or negative way based upon the choices you make. For every one of those cups of coffee, negative. All that fried food, negative. All of the animal proteins, negative. The common allergens like dairy and soy and yeast and wheat, negative. The alcohol, always negative. Well, then why should we be surprised when one day we wake up and we don't have any energy? So the mitochondria were once seen as the place where nutrients are converted into energy and to nothing more. Now scientists are discovering that the mitochondria are central to the evolution of human longevity. There's a fascinating Harvard Medical School study. It was recently published in the Journal of Molecular Evolution. By comparing the mitochondria genome of various primates, the scientists found that our mitochondria have evolved over time in a way that has allowed humans to lead longer, healthier lives without the scourge of neurodegenerative disease. And with the discovery of this critical link to both human longevity and evolution, new emphasis should be placed upon proven ways to support enhanced mitochondrial function. Now, what was interesting is 2 years ago, I was asked, could I speak with a person who had the beginning of Alzheimer's? I said, certainly. During our conversation with a woman who was completely lucid, she was only 72 at the time, I asked her about her lifestyle, and she was very happy about her lifestyle. And she was told that it was just a defect in the genes in her brain. That's what her neurologist told her. And I asked her about what she ate and drank, and every day her and her husband would have martinis in the afternoon. Why? Because it was something they always did. And I said, you realize with the percentage of alcohol that's going into your body, you're inflaming and or destroying, through oxidative stress, over 1 million brain cells, liver cells, kidney cells, and heart cells with every single martini. She said, well, that's unusual because at the golf club that has a lot of doctors, everybody drinks. Surely if it were that bad, these very bright doctors, very successful doctors, would have known, told us, stop doing it. And I said, and why would that be the case? Did they have any single class in medical school about the dangers of alcohol and the biochemistry of that alcohol? I'll bet not. I said, so are you willing to give up? And when I went through what she had to give up, she simply said, I disagree with you. I don't see any of those things as a problem, and I don't intend to give them up because it's part of my quality of life. I said, okay. Jump ahead to a month and a half ago. That same woman, was talking to a fire extinguisher, wanted to cook a couch. And if you thought it was a reality television show, watching what she said and did, you would have been partly correct. There was no camera except the human experience of being there and filming it in your conscious thinking. How in the world could a person go this far from normal in such a short period of time? That's the mitochondria. That's the neurons. That's the things we don't want to give up. So please understand when I'm suggesting, and all I can do is suggest, that every single thing you do, every single thing, there's no exception in life, that is not constructive to the body automatically is destructive. So we have these mitochondria scattered throughout the jelly-like cytoplasm within our cells, and the mitochondria range in number from hundreds to thousands per cell. Now, mind you, you have anywhere from 60 to 100 trillion cells. They give you energy in the form of what is called adenosine triphosphate, or ATP. That's a molecule that we cannot live without. But they do it at a price. According to the mitochondrial theory of aging, free electrons are generated as a byproduct of aerobic respiration. And these electrons convert oxygen to a highly reactive form capable of damaging proteins and lipids and wreaking havoc with DNA over time. And progressive respiratory chain dysfunction ensues, and damage accumulates slowly, eventually leading to the degenerative changes associated with aging. Let's put it this way. Let me make it very simple. I'm inhaling. That's oxygen going in. That's good. I'm exhaling. Carbon dioxide coming out. That's good. But the exchange of that oxygen going in means that my body is also creating what is called oxidative reactions. So in that oxygen going in, yes, you need it for life, but also there's a byproduct, and the byproduct are free radicals. Now, as long as we're living a healthy life, the body can compensate. There is a factor of compensation. If I'm taking vitamin C, vitamin E, coenzyme Q10, zinc, I'm doing great for compensation. If I'm taking PQQ, if I'm taking a lot of the nutrients for the brain or nutrients for the heart to make sure that not only am I getting my energy in the mitochondria, but I'm protecting it from free radicals. So I get the benefit, but I don't get the downside. Then I'm doing it right. But otherwise, just normal aging can be accelerated by anything you do wrong, even exercising. You have better muscles for a while and better heart rate and better detoxification, but you actually prematurely age when you start doing too much exercise. And if you doubt me, take a look at any of the long-distance athletes from 30 years ago. They look much older than their chronological age because biologically they've prematurely aged. So in that moment where they felt great doing a 50-mile run, a marathon, a triathlon, and they kept training at a very high pace, they did terrific. Today, not so much. That's why you have to do what you need to do, but always compensate for the downside. So, as a result, preserving our youthful mitochondria functions of paramount importance to keeping you alive longer. Let me just make it this simple. If you want to prolong your lifespan, and I'm sure most of you do for good reason, then pay attention to mitochondria. Preserving the youthful mitochondria function is of paramount importance, and the good news is that we have all that we need today. For example, write it down. I'm going to give you just the simple list. There's a lot more detailed list, but let's start with something simple we can all do. Let's start with coenzyme Q10 at 300 milligrams a day, morning, noon, and night. Let's add in there R-lipoic acid, lipoic acid, 300 milligrams, morning, noon, and night for 900 milligrams total. Let's work with L-carnitine at 300 milligrams three times a day, morning, noon, and night. Let's also look at, very important would be resveratrol, 100 to 200 milligrams three times a day, vitamin E, 200 units three times a day, vitamin C, 2,000 milligrams five times a day, L-carnosine, 500 to 1,000 milligrams three times a day, and then you are preventing age-related damage to your cells due to glycation, the binding of sugars and proteins in the body. Now, there's still other nutrients. I could talk about benfenamine, rhodiola, rosea, wheatgrass juice. In fact, last night when I was getting my wheatgrass, there was a guy from our audience there, and he said, that looks pretty good. I said, well, it is. It's good for you. And he said, I'll have one. I said, try it at 2 ounces. Start with 2 ounces. He said, what are you having? I'm having 16 ounces, but don't do it. I build up. So he wanted to go a little higher, and I put ginger, lemon juice, black currants, and bilberry, all with some vitamin C in mine to really spike it. And he tried it. He got down an ounce. He didn't throw it up, which was good. But he made a face. I wish I had a camera to take a picture of 1 ounce of all that. But I said, your cells are loving you because you've done a lot of good for yourself. Remember, you start the day with some lemon. Squeeze the juice of two lemons. Then take a simple grater and grate the skin of both lemons. Put it into some water, mineral water, and drink it down. It's a great way for your biochemistry, your alkalinity of your cells, turn off pain, help your digestion. It's terrific. So now you know about the mitochondria and why you should feed it and do right by it. Now I want to shift gears here for a moment to the whole idea of we are our cells. Well, we are more than that. The life force is our energy, which inhabits the cell. The cell is the house, but it only functions with the energy. give anyone who has low energy, the body is there. You go over and say, how do you feel? I don't feel so good. Why not? I have no energy. Well, what's missing? Your heart, your brain, your eyes, your lungs? No, they're all there. Energy. So we're looking at the cell, and we're not looking at the energy. This is from Ignacio Chiappella, a microbiologist, PhD from University of Berkeley in California, and his feelings about the biotech industry. Quote, they have utterly failed. Now, he says, quote, they've only come up with two genetically modified traits in 40 years, despite fouling air, water, and soil, while genetically engineering our food to withstand copious amounts of toxic chemicals. Chiappella says that no one talks about just how badly biotech is progressing despite billions spent on research and the forever promise of new organisms that repel pests or supposedly stop malaria from spreading or some other biotech-specific trait that they have yet to master. Chiappella points out that genetically modified organism scientists have become like priests with, quote, a central dogma that specific traits are determined by certain genes. If that were true, we could have put wings on pigs to make them fly. Quote, the whole foundation of genetics turns out to be wrong. Eye color is not determined by a single gene. DNA is not a master molecule. We had the benefit of 40 years of GMO failing and should liberate ourselves from the central dogma. How many GMO traits have they developed? Two after 40 years, end quote. Now, Chiappella and others like Bruce Lipton, a PhD biologist who appeared on this program many times, do not believe that DNA is the master molecule that determines a person's or plant's traits. He and those who share his rare viewpoint understand that environment plays a bigger role. Quote, what I become wasn't in my grandparents' DNA. It came from the environment. If that single story is true, the whole edifice of genetic engineering is mud on the ground. And he said that at the National Heirloom Seed Expo. Now, Chiappella also points out that genetic engineering is based upon an obsolete paradigm and is largely being pushed by a political agenda. He said instead of promoting this dogma, scientists should be challenging the erroneously erected paradigm instead of selling out to it. Quote, the knowledge that a farmer has is as important as the soil. The seeds can't be seen in isolation. How true that is. Chiappella is essentially championing the emerging field of epigenetics, which sees the world around an epigenome as having a direct influence on the DNA. Now, there are numerous papers, over 1,000, on epigenetics that show a gene's DNA sequence is affected by its environment. And by changing this environment, meaning removing pesticides, herbicides, fungicides from the soil, we can also change multiple generations of an organism's health, improving it considerably and eradicating disease. A paper by Dr. Danielle Simmons says, quote, epigenetics is involved in many normal cellular processes. Consider the fact that our cells all have the same DNA, but our bodies contain many different types of cells, neurons, liver cells, pancreatic cells, inflammatory cells, and others. How can this be? In short, cells, tissues, and organs differ because they have certain sets of genes that are turned on or expressed, as well as other sets that are turned off or inhibited. Epigenetic silencing is one way to turn genes off, and it can contribute to the differential expression. Silencing might also explain in part why genetic twins are not identical. In addition, epigenetics is important in X chromosome inactivation in female mammals, which is necessary so that females do not have twice the number of X chromosome gene products as males. End quote. Now, that may be a little confusing, but Bruce Lipton puts it a little more succinctly and simply. Quote, our health is not controlled by genetics. Conventional medicine is operating on an archaic view that we're controlled by genes. This is misunderstanding the nature of how biology works. So how would I describe this and explain this in lay language? Relatively straightforward. Let's say that you are born of parents that do not want you, but maybe they're Catholic and will not abort you. but you're not loved. You were an accident. You were an unplanned pregnancy. Now, maybe no one says a word, but the connection of the unconditional spiritual love that you need in your evolutionary process epigenetically is absent. Hence, later in life, you may have been given all that a person is supposed to be given, but if you aren't given that unconditional love, you're going to grow up very insecure. You're going to be overcompensating by being demanding in relationships and jealous of others' security, of others' comfort, of what you perceive as others' advantages in a relationship. You will need constant commitments, constant assurances that you're okay. Imagine how that will burn out any relationship. That's epigenetics. On the other hand, if you were given all that the Spirit can possibly allow, then you start life epigenetically with all the buttons turned on to expressing life, love, happiness in a way that will be in synchronization to the higher principles of existence. So this is something that psychology has yet to acknowledge. Psychology doesn't acknowledge the principles of epigenetic yet, only the conditioned response to it. And I'm suggesting there's a whole nother layer that Freud missed, Jung missed, Adler missed, Erickson missed, a lot of people missed it. I'm Gary Noll. Finally, on vitamin C. This is from Health News Impact. What they did is they did an interview with Dr. Suzanne Humphreys. Now, you remember Dr. Humphreys. I did a 5-part series on why she's opposed to vaccines, even though initially she was very pro-vaccine. She is a board-certified physician in 2 specialties, including nephrology, as well as internal medicine. She ran a department in a major hospital. And it was only when she started to look at what was happening with patients receiving vaccines before they left the hospital, and then subsequent problems that caused her patients, that she dug further. She spent over 10,000 hours in research. She's one of the most articulate persons in discussing vaccines on the planet. Needless to say, no one who's pro-vaccine will come near her because she would simply destroy any argument they have. Because the pro-vaccine advocates don't have science on their side. They have corporatized science, proprietary science. They don't have real science. So she was asked the question about vitamin C. Here's what she had to say. I'll share a few thoughts. This is at the Swedish Society of Orthomolecular Medicine. And, quote, "Much of what I've learned in my medical education is lacking in detail on how to support the biology of being human being. When people are just a little bit sick or when they're healthy, it can be very helpful to support the chemistry of the body using earth products that are put here for us and not necessarily the ones the drug companies have made for us." Then she talks about how she learned to use vitamin C, not only as her own health became extraordinarily better, but her prescription writing has gone down significantly and her health, the health of her patients has improved. And she dispels the myth regarding the dangers of vitamin C. She says, quote, "There are lots of mythology in the medical field regarding vitamin C. The fact that vitamin C is necessary to prevent scurvy, but that doses over 1,000 milligrams are dangerous, wasteful, and just gives us expensive urine is a myth. Scurvy is a disease that occurs if you have a severe lack of vitamin C, ascorbic acid, in your diet, causing anemia, gum disease, and skin hemorrhaging. Conventional doctors may say that the body becomes saturated if consumers take more than 150 milligrams a day. In addition, that in large doses of vitamin C can cause kidney stones. We hear that the whole natural vitamin C is always the best source. None of these myths we hear are true or have even been proven clinically or scientifically according to any of the medical literature." And she goes on to talk about how animals use 4 sequential liver enzymes to convert glucose to L-ascorbic acid. This is a magic chemical that has so many functions in our body that enhance our health. And then she says the 4th enzyme is missing from humans, as well as some other animals like bats, guinea pigs, and some primates. This means that human beings are dependent upon food for their vitamin C. There are examples in the animal kingdom of animals making their own vitamin C. For example, a cow makes 18 milligrams per kilogram daily. That's 12,000 milligrams a day, plus their food. Other animals can make much more than that, and yet we have a tiny little recommendation. And she says, quote, "I make none of my own vitamin C, and I'm told that I only need 75 milligrams a day. This is gross misunderstanding of what we should take each day. The science behind the assessment is flawed." Then she goes on to talk about how much you need and what she sees coming from it, and she is correct. My takeaway on this is the following. I have a lot of people using vitamin C in supplemental form, also recommending physicians using it IV, though most of them in the New York area are using it way too low a dosage. Getting a vitamin C drip once a month, twice a month is not enough. If you have cancer, AIDS-defining illnesses, hepatitis, Epstein-Barr virus, chronic fatigue syndrome, you're going to be needing vitamin C 4 days a week intravenous at very high doses with other compatible nutrients as well. In the near future, I will do a medical seminar for healthcare providers only, from nurses and physicians, on the clinical uses of vitamin C. How many scientific studies are there on vitamin C, its efficacy, chemistry, and safety? Over 35,000. 35,000 in the peer-reviewed literature. And none of them show that it works at a very small doses. The higher the dose, especially intravenous, the greater the outcome and benefit. Why aren't physicians aware of this? We'll talk more on this, and when I get closer to the date, I'm going to do that all day. It'll be an 8-hour seminar on vitamin C and its clinical uses. But now we're going to take a break and come right back. Please stay with us.
Yes, it's a good day for singing a song, and it's a good day for moving along. Yes, it's a good day. How could anything be wrong? A good day from morning to night. And it's a good day for shining your shoes, and it's a good day for losing the blues. Everything to gain and nothing to lose. A good day from morning till night. I said to the sun, good morning, sun, rise and shine today. You know you gotta get going if you're gonna make a showing. And you got the right of way. Cause it's a good day for paying your bills, and it's a good day.
I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Nall, broadcasting and video streaming from our studios in New York City. Also, every day, 24/7, we provide articles from all over the world on themes that are important for progressive minds. And in one day, you might find 200 different articles. Or put it this way, ours are not political. We don't have an ideology. Hence, we can search for the truth everywhere. We post more articles than Al Jazeera, the BBC, and any other website combined. Combine all those. And for progressive minds, we have had hundreds of millions of visits. It's the number one website for progressive people in the world. ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. Let's say hello now to Dr. Jill Stein. She is the 2016 presidential candidate for the Green Party and a strong advocate for greater third-party representation in elections, campaigns, and debates. She is a medical physician of internal medicine and advocating environmental health issues. And during her presidential run in 2012, she was endorsed by Noam Chomsky and Chris Hedges and received enough votes, making her the most successful woman presidential candidate in U.S. history. Dr. Stein is a Harvard Magna Cum Laude graduate, received her doctorate from Harvard Medical School, and over the years she's been active in Massachusetts campaigns to better protect women and children from toxic pollution, and that has been associated with learning disabilities. She also is a national board of directors member of the Physicians for Social Responsibility. Let's go now and say hello to her. Nice to have you with us today.
It's wonderful to be with you, as always, Gary. And just for the record, to clarify, you could call me the presumptive Green Party nominee. We have not yet had our process.
Oh, okay.
So just for the record, right. I am a presidential hopeful seeking the nomination with the Green Party.
Okay. Fundamentally, there is not a great deal of difference between Hillary Clinton, in my opinion, and Bernie Sanders on issues of foreign policy. I don't feel we need to discuss Hillary in any depth because her dismal foreign policy record as a super neocon chicken hawk and head of the State Department is on record. Libya, Honduras, coups in Honduras, Libya, Paraguay, coups, Syria, regime change, Ukraine, a coup, and support for Israel to eradicate Palestine. Less has been said about Bernie Sanders simply because he tiptoes around the foreign policy issues. But we know that he has voted in favor of all appropriation bills that increase defense spending. He encouraged Saudi Arabia to be more active in the Middle East conflicts and has even called Saudi Kingdom the solution to the Middle East problem. Yeah, if genocide is a solution, I guess he's right. Look at what happened, is happening right now with the greatest dislocation of people in the world. In one country, 21 million people are without basic services. You don't see a thing about that on American television. So in saying this, we can note he is completely ignoring that Saudi Arabia is the single largest exporter of fundamentalist brand of extreme Islam that fuels the ideologies of ISIS, Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, al-Nusra, and others. And now we see how Saudi Arabia is committing genocide in Yemen. And yet Sanders and Clinton would want Saudi forces in Syria, Iraq, Libya, and elsewhere. Sanders has supported AIPAC. AIPAC has supported Sanders. He has sided with Israel aggression against Gaza. We give Israel $3 billion annually, and Bernie would continue that support, unquestioning. He supported the nasty war in Kosovo, the invasion of Afghanistan, funding American debacles in Iraq, and the war on terror. He has not challenged the National Security Agency and we becoming a police state with 17 different intelligence agencies, 16 officially, 17 is a black op. So although there are some strong overlaps between your Green Party's domestic and economic platforms for social change and that of Sanders, it would seem that a Jill Stein presidency would dramatically differ than the White House Democrat or Bernie Sanders Democrat on matters of state, military and intelligence, foreign relations, and U.S. engagement in the world. So please critique where you differ from Sanders' foreign policy and his pro-military defense record, and what would you do differently?
Thank you. I think you've summarized it very well. We do have, we're on the same page pretty much on issues of economic justice, most domestic policy, although there too we come out swinging to abolish student debt, and I just want to mention that to have that on the record too. We feel that student debt really needs to be abolished. It's important that public higher education be free, but we need to essentially rid an entire generation of its chains, basically indentured servants with no way out. So that's perhaps the most important difference in domestic policy, a few others, but that's perhaps the major one. I'd say also that we have a timeline on climate, and we believe in declaring a climate emergency that really calls for an emergency mobilization as if Pearl Harbor was just bombed, except that this is actually a much more serious and permanent crisis, chaos, devastation that we're looking at. So we're calling for an all-out mobilization, which we call a Green New Deal, to address not only our economic emergency but our climate emergency. We can address them in one fell swoop. And I wanted to mention that by way of segueing into foreign policy, because moving to a green economy on an emergency basis, and we're talking about 100% clean renewable energy by 2030. We're talking about an immediate shutdown of all new permitting, no new pipelines, no new export facilities, no new LNG terminals, etc., no exploration of the Arctic, it all stops today. You know, the
what
day
about,
of green.
What about closing down all nuclear power plants?
Oh, that goes along, absolutely. And there's a 15-year timeline for that. So we basically say no new, and including no new nuclear power, as of the day of inauguration. And then going forward from there, we go on to an emergency conversion of the economy and our energy system, our food system, and our transportation, so that we are 100% wind, water, and sun, and we go into a very rapid really shut down of our existing nuclear power and our fossil fuel structures. Now, that means we are going to create an amazing amount of jobs very quickly, and we can put everyone back to work in a New Deal-type employment program that offers people good, full-time, living-wage jobs as we improve the health of our economy, our food system, with a local, organic, sustainable food system, much like Cuba did when its pipeline went down with the fall of the old Soviet Union in the early 1990s. Cuba had to convert its whole economy to a green economy overnight, because it no longer had the fossil fuels, it didn't have the pesticides, it didn't have the fertilizers, all these things that are derived from fossil fuels. But overnight then, you had an organic food system, you had clean air, you had a transportation system which was public and active, and suddenly the roads were clear and you could bike and walk. And what happened to their health? Overnight, they had a health revolution that, remind you, cost them $0. We spend $3 trillion a year now on not a health care system, but a sick care system, which enables us to barely, you know, run in place. Actually, we're backsliding as we become more and more chronically ill. Half of all Americans now have a chronic illness. You know, you have kids with diabetes, and high blood pressure.
Joe, I need to ask you some short answer questions, please.
Sure.
Okay, would you change the way the CIA, the National Security Agency, does business? Would you stop all domestic spying on American citizens who are not suspected of a terrorist activity or participation?
Well, this is what our Constitution requires that we do. So we need to stop violating the Constitution, repeal the clause of the National Defense Authorization Act that violates our presumption of innocence, etc. So the short answer there is yes.
Would you? All right, good. Just give me the short answers. Would you stop all regime change coups and in all countries of the world?
Yes, we are violating international law.
Okay. Would you suspend all military aid to Israel and supply a real peace broker deal where both countries have a right to coexist in peace?
Yes, and not limit it to Israel. It also needs to be Saudi Arabia and Egypt. We should stop funding war criminals and human rights violators.
Would you push to have the Nuremberg laws enacted so that those who have broken the laws against humans in the past would be brought to justice, including former presidents of the United States and top officials?
Yes.
Okay. Now, right now we see that there is a major conflict in Syria. Anyone who studies it realizes that it is not what we've been told. You have to look at Qatar wanting its oil pipelines, gas pipelines to go through there. The original deal was changed. You have to look at the geopolitics of the area. But clearly what we have done is want a regime change. And the blueprints for this go back sometime. How would you handle stopping the conflict, or at least bringing the conflict that now exists in Syria to a point where you can have reconstruction?
Number one, we need a weapons embargo, not only to Syria, but to the Middle East. The Russians, you know, just created a coalition for sharing intelligence. I think we need to build on that coalition and give it a very specific purpose, which is to stop the war and promote peace and dialogue. So that means stop the flow of militias across borders, and we have allies, you know, whose borders are basically very porous. Turkey, for example, over whose borders foreign fighters are flowing. We can stop the inflow of foreign fighters. We can stop the flow of finance from the Saudis in particular to ISIS. And we can stop the sale. We can call on our allies to stop buying ISIS's oil on the black market. And above all, we need a massive weapons embargo. So we can starve the beast. By bombing the beast, we're only going to create more of it, because that's what created ISIS and this chaos to start with. So
could you recognize a moderate terrorist?
No.
And that's
I don't think there's any such thing. And we are arming them. Those arms are flowing to ISIS.
That's correct. We created ISIS by the stupidity of this. A few more short answers on important issues. Would you stop the genetic engineering companies from putting untested, unsafe seeds and foods into the environment?
Yes. They are banned.
Okay. Would you stop the FDA and all governmental agencies, including the CDC, from allowing industry representatives to run them like Michael Taylor at the FDA from Monsanto?
Yes. There needs to be a firewall against conflicts of interest.
Would you make an effort to reverse Citizens United?
And go further and implement a constitutional amendment clarifying that corporations are not people and money is not speech.
Could you move to enact, the executive doesn't enact anything, but they certainly can help with fireside chats, educate the people to put pressure upon Congress to bring power back to the people so we are no longer living in the threat that anything we do in the way of free speech or our actions could be misconstrued as representing a challenge to the government, and hence we'd be put on watch list and, and arrest list.
Yes, we need to repeal the Patriot Act and
the National Defense Authorization Defense Act?
Yes.
All right. Good. Could you, if you were president, would you stop the lifeline to the military-industrial complex?
Absolutely.
All right, because that's $1.6 trillion, not $593 billion that we've been told when you look at everything. Mm-hmm. Would you also let those who are in prison for possession or use of drugs out and clean their record up so they can reenter society?
That's right, and reverse the laws and the policies that keep them out of public housing, out of education, and out of jobs.
Would you try to de-ghettoize America by bringing industry back, by repealing NAFTA, GATT, the World Trade Organization, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and any of these other unfair trade groups so that Americans can begin to re-industrialize our society?
Yes, these are corporate trade agreements. They are very oppressive to the people of the United States and the people of the world. We need fair trade,
Would you seek criminal indictments and imprisonment for those who, on major industries, know with malice aforethought that they are committing a crime and do so knowing that they will not be held accountable by any administration up to this point? They'll simply pay a fine, like the rigging of the LIBOR, a $5 trillion a deal each day, and they rigged it. The rigging of the commodities market, which they did over the last 5 years, were found guilty, but no one went to jail, and all the ballots. Would you stop bailing out corporate America? Would you let those bastards fail?
Absolutely. Stop bailing them out and hold them accountable for their waste, fraud, and abuse, which is responsible not only for crashing our economy, but for the loss of countless lives. This is not an academic matter. This has life and death consequences.
Would you try to limit or put out of business the payday loans with their exorbitant 1,000% interest on compounding interest? Would you forgive student loan interest debt? Would you start over by giving the same break that we gave to corporate America, give it to the average person so they could reclaim some sense of economic stability?
Absolutely. And we need public banks. You know, we need the alternative. We need banks that are actually serving our communities, our families, our small businesses.
Bank of North Dakota. Bank.
Yes.
Yeah.
We need to have them. You know, the post offices have a proposal to turn them into community-based banks in communities which are banking deserts.
Instead of giving an exclusive no-bid contract to Nancy Pelosi's husband worth about $1.6 trillion, yes, billion dollars to sell them.
Unbelievable.
Good. Okay, that's all I had on this. And also, would you reach out to Russia and China and other countries to try to get them to work in cooperation with us instead of making a new Cold War that only serves the, unfortunately, the neocons and those who profit off fear?
Absolutely. And it's important to note that the real obstruction to nuclear disarmament has been caused by the U.S., starting with Reagan, but continuing through Bush and through Obama. We have single-handedly reinitiated the nuclear arms race. And in fact, Russia has been reasonably restrained in not really responding. But we are going full speed ahead, spending $1 trillion over the next 3 decades, creating a whole new generation of nuclear weapons, new nuclear bomb factories, and new modes of delivery. This is absolute insanity. The American people deserve an honest broker in foreign policy. Currently, our foreign policy basically is controlled by the weapons profiteers, by the war industry, by the fossil fuel and nuclear companies. Our foreign policy is not advocated on behalf of everyday people of America. That needs to change.
Jill, we thank you for coming on and answering the direct questions, and I appreciate it, and I hope that people appreciate the power and importance of a third party. By the way, you probably are not aware of it, but Gerald Salante, Ralph Nader, myself, Cindy Sheehan, I have started a new movement. It's called Occupy Peace and Prosperity. We had our first conference in Kingston last Saturday and Sunday, and we're broadcast all over the world. We believe that unity, working together with many different people, many different coalitions, we can take back America.
I couldn't agree more. And if I could just encourage people to also go to my website, jill2016.com. We are suing the Commission on Presidential Debates because half of Americans now are not in the Democratic or Republican Party, but by limiting the presidential debates to those two parties, they shut out 50% of voters. So they are violating the law. We are suing them in court, and we have a petition. The more signatures we get on the petition, the stronger we will be in court. And we're moving forward from there. We will have an economic embargo, and then we will have civil disobedience to open up our debates as a major step towards reclaiming our democracy. That's Jill2016.com.
Jill, thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Always enjoyable to speak with you.
It sure is.
Dr. Jill Stein, who is the presumptive Green Party candidate for the president. Let's remember, real progressives do not vote Democratic or Republican. They vote with the truth. Who's going to serve the interests of the people, all the people, and nature, and animals, not the corporate Democrats and Republicans? I'm Gary Nall. Now, we're going to play a short piece. Then we're going to come back for just 1 or 2 minutes of talk back. If you'd like to make a comment on our discussion just now, call us at 888-874-4888. Here's a guy. Now, this is your typical person running for office.
Hi, I'm Gil Fulbright. And the people who bankroll my political career tell me I'm running for president. So here I am.
Real, hardworking Americans are important to me is a tagline I will be using throughout this entire campaign.
I may not be qualified to be president, but a dramatic camera angle can make me look like a president. A president with the conviction to nod, the courage to point,
and the experience to cram buzzwords into everything I jobs. Ideas, policies, morals. These are things I don't need. What I need is $2 billion.
Here's the part where I gloss over important issues. Issues like education and making it good. The economy and improving it by repeating the word jobs.
And blah, 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 something to get votes from women and minorities. I have a 5-step plan for making America better. Appeal to special interest billionaires and lobbyists behind closed doors. Raise $2 billion. Promise you earnestly that it'll be different this time. Get elected, break all my promises to you, and work tirelessly for the big donors who bought my presidency. Anytime I can pull a favor for special interest, it always gives me a huge donor. And at this point in my political career, anytime I can get a donor last longer than 4 years, well. Every 4 years, Americans are faced with a critical choice. Clinton or Bush or someone else. Well, I'm Gil Fulbright, and with a big enough donor, I can be that someone else. I'm Honest Gil Fulbright, and I approve of whatever my marketing team has put into this message.
Oh, the Chesapeake Bay. Huh, yeah. Yeah, that'd be a great landfill. Why, you're still here? You must want a political favor. Well, no can do without a donation. Click here to chip in.
And we have time for just one call. From New Hampshire, we have a listener.
What? Yes, I was very happy to hear Jill Stein, and I heard her on your show before the last election that she was running in. I'm in New Hampshire, and I was ready to vote for her, but she wasn't on the ballot. She has all these very high hopes, but if she can't get on the ballot, she can't do anything.
You are correct, but also don't vote for people who are on the ballot unless they have the same ideals. Because a vote is too precious to say it is better to have the lesser of evils. It is not. It's still evil. What we have to do, what you have to do on every state, is get the third-party candidates representing justice, the Constitution, representing true liberty and freedom. Get these individuals onto the ballots. Help them. That's a grassroots effort. So that's your responsibility now. I'll provide a form for people. We'll provide the articles, the documentaries, the insights, the debates. But it's the people listening that have to get out there, organize, and get signatures, get people signed up. Let's get them on the ballot. Thank you.
Okay. Well, I didn't know that, and I hope you focus on that a bit.
We will.
Thank you. Thank you.
Absolutely, we will. We're out of time. Have a nice day, everyone.
Smile.